All right. Hello, everyone. This is Toby Milroy again, Chief Operating Officer for NATMA. And welcome to our monthly Maximum Impact conference call. This is sort of your opportunity every month to have your specific questions answered and any specific learning issues that you may have in your specific location, in your specific school that you may feel is somehow unique or needs to be addressed. This is a great forum to be able to do that. On many of these calls, what we'd really recommend that you do is submit any questions that you might have ahead of time by email. Either email me at tobymilroy@natma.com or email Grandmaster Stephen Oliver at stephenoliver@natma.com. And we'll be able to get those questions a little bit ahead of time, be able to prepare a bit for an answer, and be ready with that on our call. It's also a great opportunity for us to collaborate a little bit. And when we've had big breakthroughs or current marketing plans that we're working on, new marketing strategies that we're testing in the marketplace, to be able to share those ideas, be able to share those strategies and the current results. And to get us kind of kicked off today, we've got several pretty big topics on the agenda for today. We just finished up our about 2 weeks ago, it feels like longer, but maybe two and a half weeks ago, we had our last Inner Circle and Peak Performer Mastermind meeting up at West Point Military Academy in New York. And we're gonna kind of go over some of the big breakthroughs from the weekend, what we accomplished up there, some of the training that our team went through, and some of the things that we accomplished learning from some of the insiders at West Point. But also, as a piece of vision, as a piece of culture, I think that was probably the most valuable piece of what we accomplished up there, was sort of being surrounded by this culture of excellence. And I think that's something that is going to be very useful for all of our attendees and everyone who made the trip and who brought those strategies back to their school. So, and we're also going to talk a little bit about what we're up to in the summertime. I know a lot of schools really struggle during the summer, and really there's no reason. Summer is one of the busiest times of the year for all of our franchise locations, and we're doing all sorts of community involvement, low and no cost marketing strategies right now in the marketplace to drive huge numbers of leads. There are several family summer movies that are coming over the next few weeks, plus our summer success strategy with the day camps and things like that. And it's just, for the family market right now is getting ready to be an immensely busy time for the first 3 or 4 weeks of the summer. So we're going to talk a little bit about all of those items too. So, Master Oliver, if you wanted to start us off, our quick agenda obviously today was we wanted to do a little bit of a wrap-up and a recap of what we accomplished up at West Point. Where would you like to start with that?
Well, I think it's just so important, and the maybe the starting point is to define what teaching leadership training really is, because I think so many times, I see two elements of the spectrum when it comes to martial arts schools, both of which I think misses the mark. Is one end of the spectrum, leadership training is about teaching me XMA, or I'm a Taekwondo school and you now get to learn MMA. And see, that's all fine. You've got to have some little physical sizzle that you throw in. But if that's all it is it's almost a bait and switch. It's teaching them that, or convincing them that you're going to learn high level leadership training, and in fact, it's really you're teaching them just more martial arts physical skills. And again, nothing against martial arts physical skills, but it's not what we're really looking to accomplish, right? The other end of the spectrum I see is in thinking that leadership training is only about teaching them about class management and teaching them how to be an assistant instructor. And I think that's certainly a component. And it's for our case, it's a self-serving component, because it ends up in our tradition of free volunteer labor. But the middle point, I think, of what teaching leadership is about, and really what teaching leadership at West Point is about. It is about what the psychologists term it, internal locus of control. And the book that we love to quote, and I think it's only available right now on Kindle, is West Point Way of Leadership by Larry Donathorne, who we had at one of our events a year or two ago. In fact, we've got a great video of his. But the starting point of teaching leadership is about how to lead oneself. And the internal locus of control is about teaching a student how to never have an excuse for their results, to always be focused on taking 100% personal responsibility. And, you know, Master Milroy, you and I just did another little seminar tour, and I can tell you within, 45 seconds, school owners that are going to either slide along laterally or fail versus the ones who are successes, because the ones who are going to fail give us every excuse for why in their area, in their town, with their style, with their background, with their situation, their numbers are bad. And if we don't teach ourselves first, our staff next, and our students next, how to permanently eliminate all excuses and to really take 100% credit or the blame for results, there's a huge problem. And I think the starting point is that, is the starting point is leadership is first about teaching personal leadership. And then it's about once you've taught somebody personal leadership and they really exemplify that, then the next piece is about them walking the talk, both as an instructor and a staff member. If our people aren't what we expect our students to be, there's all kinds of problems that happen.
Yeah, I think I think that in one of the chapters in the book, by the way, Larry Donathorne has been a great support for us and a great resource for, obviously, for Mile High Karate for many, many, many years, helping to, for anyone who doesn't know his background, Colonel Larry Donathorne is, I think you can get it. The book is out of print, but I think you can still get it on Amazon or a few other places used. But it's the West Point Way of Leadership, and basically,
well, you can get it on Kindle, and
yeah,
and perhaps on Apple Books and on Google Books as well. I haven't looked at that, but you can get a Kindle reader for an Android tablet. You can get a Kindle reader for an Android, for an iPhone, for an iPad, for a Mac, for a PC, for a Kindle. So you can get it digitally. If you go to Amazon, there's all kinds of used and new options that aren't direct to the publisher either. So
yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying. His sort of responsibility at the time was he was in the ethics and character, basically department at West Point, and he was sort of commissioned by or charged by the commanding officer to basically encapsulate how West Point creates what they create. He was charged with the responsibility of saying, hey, how do we do what we do? At the end of 4 years, these people become, second lieutenants, and we go put them out in the field, and they in almost all cases, have direct responsibility for people's lives, right? They're going to go out and be in charge of people, of soldiers, of command and control constructs. So, your responsibility is basically to encapsulate and sort of, basically, quote-unquote, write the book, about how we do this. And that's what he did. And he did a great job of kind of simplifying these four passes, what each year of their West Point experience is about. And what you just described is basically what he would call the first pass. That's the first year of their experience at West Point is all about self-leadership, about taking personal responsibility for everything. And the example that he uses in the book, which I think is really useful for everybody, and this is an example that I've used, in my schools, and certainly you're using in yours, and it's just something that I think every student should be taught. The story that he tells in the book is, if a cadet is walking out to the parade ground and the cadet next to him steps in a puddle and splashes mud on his shoes, and he goes to an inspection, and the cadet in charge looks at the shoes and says, why are your shoes dirty? Well, in the first year, in this self-leadership course, right, this first pass, in the entire first year, there are only four acceptable responses to any senior cadet's questions. It's either, you know, yes sir, no sir, or ma'am. I don't understand, meaning I need more information. Or fourth, no excuses. So those are the only four things that they can, those are the only four options they have to answer that question. So it forces the cadet to basically, you know, figure out what the answer is going to be. And it can only be no excuses. He can't point at the guy next to him and say, well, he stepped in the puddle, right? Mm-hmm. He's got to take responsibility for it. So I think what you're describing is exactly right, and that's what Donna Thorpe would describe as that first pass. How do we construct that in our schools, right? That's something I think that we should all be really focused on. How do we create experiences? And, you know, experiential learning is how all of us learn all of this stuff. How do we create those experiences in the classroom so that the students are forced to take internal locus of control? They're forced to take responsibility for all that. So an example is, you know, if they forget their gear bag, well, they can't blame mom for not having their gear, right? They have to, you know, they can't blame mom for not having one foot pad instead of the other, and, you know, things like that. I mean, there are a million little examples, but I think that's a huge lesson that, again, we can create curriculum based on that. I mean, that's the whole concept.
Well, and it's in a tournament or an intramural tournament setting, it's having the speech about, you know, if I don't do well in a tournament, and I used to quote, you know, my instructor, Jeff Smith. I read an article at the one kickboxing fight that he lost, and his conversation to the interviewer was, well, you know, I let it go to decision, and, you know, the decision went against me, and so I obviously needed to train harder so it wouldn't go to decision. And there were all kinds of good reasons that he could have had all kinds of excuses for why it went the way it was, but that wouldn't have been the mark of a champion. In a classroom setting, they go to a tournament, it's never acceptable that they didn't do well because the judge didn't like them. I used to have a conversation with a bunch of our high-level national competitors, which was, you know, you may be right. The judges didn't like you. Maybe right, the teacher didn't like you. What is it you're doing, and what is it that you can fix about that to make sure the next time they at least respect you? Because if there's something going on interpersonally, it's not them, it's you. Same thing is true about blaming the teacher at school. I mean, we all hear parents who do this. Well, you know, I know that the grade report that Billy turned in doesn't look very good, but this teacher is this and that and the other thing. But the conversation has to be with the kids of, you know, if the teacher doesn't like you, it's your responsibility to figure out how to get the teacher to at least respect and support you. And so it's not an excuse that is useful for you. To have that. And so you have that kind of conversation all the time. And if they haven't practiced, it's easy for them to, to give the excuse that, you know, mom's been sick, grandma's been sick, we had some, you know, complications, we've been busy at school, busy at work. But in reality, all we want to get is to the results. And if we think in terms of the four passes they talk about in West Point, there's, you know, I always think in terms of the 4 years on the process to black belt. And, you know, year four, I can be a lot harsher, rougher, tougher than I can in year one. But part of it is taking them through the process of weaning them off of rewards constantly. And so if it's a white belt, I want them to get a stripe for, you know, speaking repetitiously, facetiously. But if they're a brown or black belt, I want them to, you know, have taught themselves that, you know, they want to be giving themselves their own recognition, and I don't have to be doing it constantly.
Yeah, you know, maybe the final note on this self-leadership conversation, one of the big breakthroughs, I've got several of them from the meeting that we had at West Point, but one of the, I think the second best line of the weekend, if not the best line of the weekend, was Sean Harvey. And his comment was, you know, the more I learn about all this stuff, the more I realize that I'm the asshole, right?
Yeah.
And it's a colorful way of describing what we're just talking about, is that, you know, whatever the external circumstances are, if you believe that your demographic is so challenged that you can't charge X, or if you believe that the people in your town are just so different than the people in every other town in the world, and that they're so small-minded and so closed-minded, and that for some other economic or sociological reasons that they won't do X, Y, or Z. If that's what you believe, then the reality is that the only one you can change is you anyway. So you might as well own that, right? You might as well own the circumstance and determine what you can do to improve the situation, right? So whether in almost all cases that assumption is wrong. I mean, we have schools that are operating extremely successfully in very challenged demographics, in very small towns, in very large towns, in very big cities, in very, you know, I mean, just in virtually every and any economic or geographic circumstance you can describe. And in all of those cases where we have someone who's doing exceptionally well under relatively bad circumstances or relatively challenging circumstances, it's because they've simply made a choice to own it, right? They've simply made a decision that, yeah, I'm in a tough area, so what, right? I'm still going to fix it. I'm going to figure out how to build a model. I'm going to build a process that works. If I have 50% of the prospects who walk in the door are riding on the bus and don't have a car and don't have money to, you know, barely afford the home they live in, well, then I'm just going to have to generate twice as many leads. That's all, right? Or if I'm in an area where people are, you know, I believe that they, you know, simply won't commit to training because soccer gets in the way and baseball gets in the way and football gets in the way, then I'm going to figure out how to go market to people who aren't in soccer, baseball, or football, or do join ventures with these other sports.
On that one, I've always beat the staff up of if they really believe that soccer is more important than martial arts training, it means we haven't communicated the value of what we do.
That was going to be my final part. And if you believe that the people that you have can only afford or will only pay X, then your mission is how do I deliver X times 5 in value? Therefore, X times 2 is a bargain, right?
Right.
So that's exactly right.
And communicate it effectively so that they see it, understand it, and believe it. The you know, going back to that though is the taking personal responsibility. So let's say that you are in a crappy location. Well, you're the one that put it there, right? And so if you're in a crappy location, there is question number one is in reasonable driving distance. Are there people who do have a reasonable enough income and with the right level of marketing persuasion could be convinced to come to your location? If that's the case, and in many cases it is, I mean, you know, a mile down the street or 2 miles down the street going the other direction, there are decent prospects, then you need to go over and get them and not just rely on whoever stumbles through the door. But the other side of it, I think, is exactly correct, too, is you're the one that put the damn school where it's at. And a lot of schools are where they're at because you grew up there or your instructor had the school and you inherited from it. But, you know, there's no reason in the world you can't move 3 miles down the street and have a location, a place where it is better, if that is, in fact, the case. As you said, Ms. Murray, we find that's used often as an excuse, not as reality. Because in any market, again, you know, hate to be a dead horse, but in Fresno, California, with the worst unemployment rate in California and with, you know, a really low income, we're force feeding in 150 intros to get 30 or 40 enrollments a month at a 200-plus a month price point. So, you know, it's more often an excuse than reality. However, if it is reality, move the damn school, you know. I intentionally ended up in Denver, Colorado, because it was the type of market I wanted it to be. And several of our people, former Inner Circle members, were, in fact, coaching them through, you know, getting out of the current lease and getting into a new lease and moving to a location that's better. So don't ever let external circumstances become your excuse for failure. Fix it.
Yeah, and absolutely right, and it just it's a simple fact. Well, in most cases, I think another principle that's really important when you're talking about self-leadership is accurate thinking. Something that Napoleon Hill talks about, and you know, many authors in that genre, you know, kind of talk about is it's important to make sure that what your beliefs are really accurate. And in most, here's how I describe it. And I think I may have stolen this from Jeff Smith, if I'm not mistaken. But you know, running a small business in any category, but especially in the martial arts, we all wear our heart on our sleeve. We go out and pour our heart out to our customers on a daily basis. And if someone doesn't like us, we really take that pretty personally, right? And so running a martial arts business, I think I stole it from you, but running a martial arts business is like being in a 12-round prize fight, right? And now you're in round 8, and you've been punched in the face for 8 rounds, and your nose has been broken for 2 rounds, so you can't breathe particularly well, and you're bleeding out of the side of your mouth, and your jaw hurts, right? And, you know, now you're the worst person in the world to be objective about what's happening to you out there, right? So you're in the middle of the ring getting, you know, the hell punched out of you. You really need to have, when you go on the stool, when you go back to your corner and sit down, you really need somebody that's going to be objective and who can say, listen, your left is all the way down by your chest. You got to keep your left up. He's tearing you apart with his right hook. You know, and watch for his left leg because he's got a, you know, he has a little tell. He moves his hip forward. So, you know, so you've got to have somebody who's going to help you be objective. And the point of that is that you've been out there, you know, getting punched in the face for 8 rounds. Maybe what you believe isn't accurate, right? You know, you've had an awful lot of people who've come in and said, you know, I just can't afford that. You know, I have to go somewhere else. And you remember that. You remember the things that reinforce your beliefs, and you tend to forget the things that contradict your beliefs. So you forget the ones, you forget the students who enrolled with no problem, and you forget the ones who thought that you were underpriced but never told you that, right? So all you remember are the ones who had some kind of an objection about price or about commitment or about term or about whatever it might be, and you carry that baggage around with you. So you have to try to shed all that. And if you believe that everybody in your community buys everything only on price, right, then if you looked out your window and you saw any other car than a Kia Rio or a Nissan Versa, then you're wrong, right? Because people buy cars for other reasons. They have other, you know, motivations and other problems that they're trying to solve when they buy a car. And if you go to the grocery store and the only type of potato chips you see in the aisle are the generic cheap chips. If there are any others, if there are any name brand chips that are more expensive, then your belief is wrong, right? People do choose to buy, in many cases, a more premium product or service. You just have to figure out what those reasons are, right?
Well, and by the way, when you and I, we didn't get a chance to take everybody, but we went to Stu Leonard's. And Stu Leonard's, I think, still holds the record of the highest per square foot of any grocery or dairy store in the country. And we looked through and evaluated. And what's interesting about them is, unlike the typical high volume, low margin, low net profit grocery store, is they carry essentially two brands of each thing. They carry their house brand, which is the ultra premium, so not the typical grocery store where their house brand is like the generic cheap one. It's the ultimate, you know, the high-level premium one. Then they carry the best-selling one. And so for every item on the shelf, they're not selling anything by price. They're selling it all by quality. And
yeah, and what's interesting too, by the way, just to kind of clarify too. So if you went to the potato, you know, if you went down the aisle and you saw potato chips, you would have like the number one major national brand, like whatever, Ruffles, and then next to that you would have the Stu Leonard's brand, which is this brand, and in many areas around the store, like in the meat area or the fruit area or whatever, there's a big video screen that has Stu himself walking around the farm with the cows, talking about how it's all organic and there's no hormones and there's, you know, they massage the cows every day and, you know, all that sort of stuff. So it really does tell you the story about, you know, why you should be thinking about this premium version. So it is a very sophisticated approach.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, and the not to get too far astray, I mean, our topic was really about using the lessons there to structure and develop a leadership program. And the the I think the essence of developing a leadership program, and I described it on that video. Hopefully, everybody has had a chance to see basically the infomercial that we put together, for my schools, for the franchise schools, for the upgrade process. If not, it's on the member site. But we talk about everyone on the way to black belt, that there's four traits that they can develop. First, they learn how to be an independent self-starter, and they learn how to be a good student, then they learn how to be a good independent self-starter. Next, they learn how to be a good independent team member, then they learn how to be a team leader and obviously a larger group leader. And it's moving them through those passes, teaching them how to be an effective student in your classroom, and then teaching them how to transition that into every learning experience. Then teaching them how to be a good independent self-starter, we need them off of rewards and punishments and on to wanting to be successful for its own sake. Then moving them to the next level through your leadership program on learning how to also be a good independent team member. And next, moving them into really being a good group or team leader. And obviously next, which is very beneficial for us as a business owner, but also very beneficial for them, is teaching them how to be a SWAT team or storm team member, how to lead a small group in the classroom environment, running them through a structure training. And ultimately through that, you can develop an awful lot of volunteer part-timers, or you can develop an awful lot of candidates for part-time and or full-time instructor positions. And ultimately, single school owner operators have to be developing staff constantly, and one of the first priorities has to be to develop a head instructor for your school and not have it be a bunch of part-timers, a bunch of volunteers, but have a good full-time head instructor so that you can move into managing the business rather than basically having an hourly position teaching class.
Yeah, it strikes me when you say that, it strikes me a couple things. Is that one is that in let's say your model, or what we have seen to be the most successful model of implementing a leadership program in your school for both optimum financial results, optimum quality results for a student, and optimum leadership development results, frankly, is it's not about, well, like you were describing earlier, it's not that I'm selling them an upgrade that's going to teach them how to be a karate instructor, right? That's only attractive to a small sliver of my customer base who thinks that their optimum career opportunities for their child is to be a martial arts teacher, right? But what is an optimum vision in many cases for that parent is, now that I've had Johnny in your program for a while, I'm less concerned about him just surviving and being functional in elementary school and high school and college or whatever. Now I see that he has more potential, right? If we do our job well in the introductory process or in the orientation process with the student, we should be showing the parents, and frankly the student, but we should be expanding their vision about what's possible. Now they should be thinking, what skills is he going to need or is she going to need to not just be, like I was in my career or whatever the case may be, what they're thinking, not just maybe the worker bee who goes out and works for IBM or works for, the local factory, but who maybe becomes an entrepreneur or maybe becomes like an executive or a manager or something like that, someone who, has the next set of skills. So
let's not miss an important component. Well, if you're running a women's cardio program, you're running a men's MMA program, you're running a Muay Thai program, this stuff is even more important. Exactly. And the logic is even more vital. Is you can run a cardio program with punch cards, $60 a month, month to month, and be broke. Or you can run a program that truly teaches them life skills, career development, learning how to set goals and accomplish goals, personal leadership training. And by the way, there's all kinds of textbooks and support material and stuff, either for adult men or adult women, that fit exactly into this model. So we're working with this model with Krav Maga schools and cardio kickboxing schools and Muay Thai schools and MMA schools. And we make the mistake of thinking that adults are training only for fitness or only for losing weight or only for hardcore defense, And in reality, every market ultimately has the same outcome, which is personal development. To an adult, it's hard to sell personal development up front. They come in the door for some other reason. To a child, it's easy to sell personal development up front because mom's making the decision. Since mom's making the decision, mom is looking for something for their for her child. But if I'm an adult woman looking for it for myself, I don't come to you saying I need confidence. I come to you asking to lose weight, or I come to you asking to develop better fighting skills. But in reality, what I want is confidence in my career. I want to be able to set goals. I want to have a high level of personal leadership. I want to learn how to take personal responsibility. I want to learn how to set goals. I want to learn how to manage my money. And that's the difference between a $60 a month cardio program and and Sean's program, $297 in the front door, and then $497 is an upgrade. The other thing, going back to what you said, Mr. Murray, we certainly have seen some models where you can sell a $35,000 or $40,000 or $45,000 instructor development training program for adults, and so there are opportunities there for a high level thing. But again, the average parent of an 8-year-old, they're not looking at this as I'm want my child to become a martial arts instructor. Hopefully, we can some portion of them convince them otherwise and help ourselves, but they're looking at it from the standpoint of, is my child going to be the class president? Is my child going to be the football captain? Is my child going to get a scholarship to Harvard or Yale or Princeton? Is my child going to overcome negative peer pressure? So the same is true on both markets. And you know, when we're talking in terms of what works in kids programs, same thing works in adult programs. The marketing approach is different, but the behind the scenes, back of the process outcome is the same.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, yeah, absolutely. And what strikes me again is, if you go back and look at, and I mean, obviously the adult piece of it should be self-explanatory just by looking at West Point, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, if you look at the way the military is set up, just in and of itself, yeah. I mean, we start to, I think, diminish the value of what we deliver long term when we start to steer away from what we already know works, where we take adults out of uniform and we put them in T-shirts and, you know, sneakers and stuff like that. And, I mean, there's a place and a role for a lot of that stuff. But when you go on to West Point property, everybody's in uniform. And if you think it's cheesy for someone to, you know, want to work really hard to earn that next belt when they're 45 years old, well, I got to tell you, what do you think General Petraeus had to go through to get that third star? Or to get that fourth star, right? I mean, so it's the same. It's human behavior. Once you have a firm understanding of how humans behave and what motivates them and those types of things, our martial arts process is set up extremely effectively to be able to accomplish great results. And I guess what I was going to say on the West Point piece of it is that if you look at the way what you just described, Mr. Oliver, is very, very, very important. You have a huge problem in a single martial arts school or in a small chain of schools where you need to be developing staff members on an ongoing basis. They're just like students. Staff are just like students. They drop out, right? Some it takes 5 years, 10 years, 20 years. Some are going to be with you for a really long time. But in macro, you're always going to need new staff people. You're going to need people sitting on the bench waiting to jump in. And when you look at the way West Point was set up, if you watch any of those little videos I put up on the website or whatever, you see that when the new plebe cadets come in, one of their first objectives is they go and pick up all their stuff, and they go check in with the cadet in the red sash. So they have to stand on this line and deliver a certain script and check in to the room. Well, those cadets, the cadets that they're checking in to are seniors. Right, they're seniors or juniors at West Point. So it's exactly the same as what we can do in our martial arts school. Our seniors or juniors are our brown belts and our black belts. And it takes personal leadership from the school owner and a level of executive leadership on the school owner's part to be able to prepare those blue belts, brown belts, black belts, et cetera, to be able to provide those functions, to be able to accomplish those functions in the school. But the great news is that if you have all that set up, if you have those stages set up along the way, your life as a school owner, as far as delivering everything that you have to deliver in the classroom, becomes so much easier. It doesn't have to be you that teaches every minute of every class or that delivers every piece of every curriculum, you know, all the curriculum that you deliver and those types of things. If you force yourself to step into the role of leadership, taking on that leadership role, you'll develop people. I think it's very, very, very common in schools that struggle that they simply refuse to take that step. They have to do everything. They have to keep all those plates spinning all themselves because they simply, the honest to God truth is they just lack that leadership quality. They lack that ability to manage, you know, behavior and manage other people and lead them to the next level. So I think that's something that if you looked at those videos and things like that that I put on the site and you compare that to how a martial arts classroom can and could work, it works extremely well in what we're doing with all four of those passes. So I think that's something that a lot of our guys really took away, you know, when we drove around campus and we saw, you know, all of these cadets. It wasn't always an officer in charge of all the cadets. I mean, there were other cadets, and then cadets, and you know, those exactly. So I think that was a pretty big takeaway for everybody.
Yeah, and then the you know, going back, I think, to the practical is there really is no good substitute to being live at these meetings and events that we do, because I always find several things happen. One is, at some level, the hallway conversations are as important as what's happening in the room, and it's amazing how many of the Peak Perform Inner Circle members end up bonding with, learning about other school owners in very similar circumstances who are doing double or triple what they're doing. And it immediately, frankly, you know, eliminates all of the excuses you could possibly have. And it gives you other models. So it's not just me saying it or W saying it. It's really looking at other people right now who are running $100,000 a month schools or $80,000 a month schools or if you're at 15, who's at 30, and who just recently made the same leap you did. So there's no replacement for that. And I really would encourage anybody who's a member of the organization but is not in that peak performers level, if you're over $10,000 or $12,000 a month, I mean, that's the place you should be. Obviously, the Inner Circle is a very high threshold, $500,000 and up schools, multi-million dollar schools. And we really have the, you know, I mean, there really is nobody else in the martial arts industry who is as good at nor who has the corner on the very high-level school owners, bringing them all in the room, sharing with the results in a very open environment. And I can't stress that enough because, you know, we can talk about all the lessons of West Point, but it's something else to be, you know, locked in a room for 2 days with other really high-performing people on the campus with the inspiration that goes with that, plus the inspiration that just goes with some of the members you hear. You know, one of our members there, we talked about doing a $1,000 a month developmental program, and he went out overnight, mostly by text messaging, and signed up three people into a $1,000 a month program. And I remember another time a gentleman I work with, I gave him the idea, and pretty quickly he had 40 people in what's now a $1,297 a month program and a $1,500 program. It doesn't take much once you've got some momentum to add $30,000 or $40,000 to your bottom line. So you just can't replace that environment. From the actual meeting, Master Miller.
You know, Mr. Robert, I think one thing I'd expand on that for just a minute is that it in some cases isn't the big things. In a lot of cases, it's the little pieces of glue, right? And I think everybody would agree with this, if you know, whoever's on the call, but I think everybody would agree who attended the meeting that even the Thayer Hotel, so the Thayer is on West Point property, and it's built in the same architectural style as all of the, you know, buildings on West Point campus and things like that, and it's an okay hotel. I mean, it's a pretty nice hotel. It's not like a five-star. It's not like the, you know, the Mary Marquis in Times Square and stuff like that. But
it's an old hotel.
Exactly.
Pretty good job. But yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's like converted, you know, and so it was nice, but everything around it. I mean, heads of state go here. You know, ambassadors go here, presidents of the United States go here, and they have executive meetings, and they meet with generals, and, you know, these types of things. So everywhere you looked, even just around the hotel, not even on the campus, but just even around the Thayer, everywhere you looked, it was MacArthur's, you know, tavern. And it was all about General MacArthur and the whole story and the photos and the, you know, the battle strategies and things like that. Everywhere you looked, there were these little pieces of glue. It reminded me very, very, very much of the Disney trip that we did with all the Inner Circle People Forum members, where every little piece of everything that they touched, everything that a staff member touched, or everything that was a piece of the surroundings or the decor or just the culture, was all about this excellence, this level of excellence, that excuses weren't accepted. And, you know, it was literally about creating a better future, creating better people, creating better, you know, all of this. One of the great examples is, as we were walking around campus, I noticed that these benches, there are these stone benches around this kind of viewing area of the Hudson River. There's just a really beautiful little overlook. And there were, you know, monuments everywhere, of course, but there were these benches. And I noticed there was a sign that said that these benches had been donated by the alumni of 1 year, of a class of 1 year. I can't remember what year it was, 1980-something maybe. And each of the benches, these big stone, you know, benches, on the ends of each bench had, like, you know, integrity on one of them. And the other one was discipline. And the other one was duty. And the other was honor. And, you know, these types of things. So it's at every little piece. So when you look around your school, I think this is one of the big lessons that a lot of our folks, I know the bus conversation as we were driving around campus, after seeing that in particular, was very much focused around, you know, what are all of the little pieces of culture that we can integrate into our schools that reinforce these values, that, you know, make it overt, not covert, what we're trying to accomplish here, from the posters on the walls to the, you know, the artwork of the children did hanging on the, you know, walls or whatever the case may be. But just there were so many little teeny pieces of glue and culture everywhere you looked. It was just overt. I mean, it was unmissable, you know. And I think that might have been one of the big takeaways for a lot of folks. And that's not something that you remember to talk about on a tour, or that you remember to talk about, you know, in a classroom setting, or that you remember to, it's one of those little details that really makes a big difference when you sum total it all together.
Absolutely. You know, and back to the topic, obviously, is developing leadership, but, you know, let's shift it back to the practical, is implementing leadership programs and high-level upgrades in your school. And the mistake that I see made so many times with even members who have been around for a long time and have been well educated on this is they underestimate how quickly they need to set somebody's, meaning a new student's, how quickly they need to set their mindset about what the right way is to interact with the school and the program. And, you know, some of you have heard me talk about the stats, but Jeff Smith may join us today, but at his school, which is our training center, Northeast Training Center for Modeling Karate, the number last year was 87% of all new students ended up renewed within the first 2 months. And of the ones that ended up renewing, 90% plus ended up in the leadership program rather than in the lower level program. So the ratio was over 90% chose the far more expensive program. And just a tick under 90%, over 80%, ended up renewing within the first 2 months while they're a white belt. And, you know, the temptation is to try to look at, here's this program that we're going to only let our brown or black belts join who've proven six things and jumped through five hoops. Well, you know, truthfully, part of the way that you get much better student retention is by setting them to think about your school and long-term goals and follow through right at the outset. The second thing is getting them to really make a commitment. I mean, there's a reason why, you know, schools like Harvard and West Point have 80% to 90% plus graduation rate after 4 years, even as difficult as it is, because nobody goes there without expecting that they're going to get their degree. They don't go expecting, I'm going to try a couple of midterms and finals if I really like it, and if they're nice to me, then I'll stay. And we've got to be able to continually to ramp up our physical expectations at the higher end by continuing to ramp up the students' commitment to our program. The only way we can do that, frankly, is to teach them that this is what this is. It's not a recreational activity. It's not a 90-day plan to lose weight before your sister's wedding, and it's not just a summer activity for your 12-year-old before they're back to the soccer season. But this is an ongoing school, just like elementary school or college, and it's a supplement to your other recreational activities.
Yeah, I think what's interesting about that, too, is the way West Point handles that, by the way, is they have such a deep culture, right, that obviously, virtually everybody going into the thing, their expectation is they're going to go on and become an officer in the Army, et cetera, et cetera. And the payback, by the way, is 8 years, 5 years active duty, 3 year reserve. So they get 4 years of education, they pay back 8 years at the end of the deal, which is, anyway. But there's something on the first day of their junior year is called, commitment day.
Basically, they can opt out, so they can
Exactly. So the first day of that third year, they can basically opt out. So they can basically consume 2 years of training, right? 2 years of education, and basically drop out with nothing to repay, right? But the number of people that do that is so astronomically low. It's a real testament to the level of the culture they've created in the environment. So I think that piece of it, how deep that culture is really something that, that we really want to replicate in our schools. I mean, just imagine if you talk to every blue belt and just ask them if they wanted to drop out today. You don't have to continue with your contract. We'll just tear it up and throw it away, right? But, if you can replicate that type of culture that keeps people that solid, I think that's pretty exceptional.
Absolutely. It really gets them to the point that they're not going to even consider dropping out before they get their black belt. And then before they get their black belt, they're setting goals for second degree and third degree black belt. They're setting goals to be a certified assistant instructor, whatever it might be. And you can certainly use tournaments as the tool. APA does that very effectively. You can use other events and activities and certification as the tool. But it's always having a long-term goal, 3 to 5 years that the student is shooting for, and also having a 60 to 90-day thing. And it is a mistake people make with black belts, by the way, is they get them to first degree and tell them their next test will be in 3 years for second degree, and then wonder why they drop out. If you're not progress checking them every 2 to 3 months, you have a problem. If they're not getting ongoing feedback, you have a problem. So you've got to keep that process going as well. Hey, Master Miller, we had several questions emailed in ahead of time, and probably have some questions live on the call as well. Sometimes martial arts school owners get a little tongue-tied, but we had one about being a co-author of a book. I saw that question and a couple of other questions yesterday. The book thing, I think, was from our Inner Circle project. And, the Inner Circle a couple different times have written books. Tell everybody about that, about what they've done in the past, and of course there'll be a new project in the near term for that.
Yeah, basically we've done two so far, and the third we'll be ramping up for here pretty quickly. But basically the concept is this, is that, obviously if you've been a member for any amount of time, you know that one of the marketing strategies that you should be doing each and every month is submitting some type of a press campaign, some type of a media campaign to the local media. Because unfortunately, you can make a decision about whether you think it's unfortunate or not. But celebrity sells. I mean, there's just no doubt about it. And being able to garner free publicity and free media is very important. The next level of that is for people to really perceive you as the expert in your field, the guy to go to if you want X, Y, or Z. And in our particular niche, in the martial arts industry, we have the advantage of that being mostly local. So being an author of a book, being, quote, a best-selling or a published author in a certain topic is very, very, very useful not just in your media campaigns, but just in general, in macro. So one of the things that we've done is made it really simple. You know, most people, everybody inside them has a book waiting to get out. Everybody has enough knowledge and enough experience and enough, especially just becoming a black belt, that, you know, you really have a great story to tell. You have a lot of skills and knowledge to be able to impart. But the logistics are difficult. Getting the thing put together and laid out and artwork and published and all that sort of stuff is very difficult, time-consuming, and very painful. So what we've done is leverage our ability to do all that stuff for you. And what would happen is we would select maybe 10 or 12 Inner Circle or Peak Performer members each cycle, and they would each submit a chapter, a couple thousand, 3,000 words, something like that. And we would basically do most of the work. As long as the chapter came to me relatively well done, then we would be able to put it into our template, get the thing done, and combine it with others create the finished product.
Keeping in mind, a lot of those chapters ended up, an interview, transcribed the interview, and then had somebody clean it up. So it's a very non-threatening process. But it's something we've done a couple times already with the Inner Circle members. It's just one of the extra bonuses at that level.
And there were two purposes, by the way. The purpose of the initial book is all about lead generation. So it was all. Oh, I'm sorry. The purpose of the first one was selling leadership programs. So each chapter that each of our contributors submitted was all about one particular leadership lesson that they really enjoyed teaching or that they really thought was valuable. So, you know, basically, for the example, you know, Sean Harvey wrote the chapter on, I don't know. I just can't remember off the top of my head, but, you know, self-determination or whatever the case may be. You know, some leadership skill that he's particularly, you know, successful with and focused on. And then now what he's using that book for is he's giving that to each leadership upgrade prospect and having them read his chapter and read perhaps even a couple of the other chapters. And a few of the lead-in chapters I did specifically to reinforce your celebrity as a school owner. The reason that, you know, NATMA, you're a NATMA member and NATMA's largest, you know, association in the martial arts industry, and here's what it's designed to do, and basically giving you credibility. And then you have that piece of content. So the first one was all about supporting and encouraging the upgrade. The second book that we did was all about penetrating large groups of potential customers in the family market. So the second book that we did was called Coaching Children to Succeed in Life. And that book was basically designed to go to local elementary school principals, guidance counselors, PE teachers, youth group leaders like scouts, those types of things. So it positions the authors, it positions each of the contributors as an expert in coaching children to be successful in life. And there are mechanisms inside the book that, let's say you mailed it to the local scout troop, where there are mechanisms inside the book where the scout troop can go to a website, fill out a form, send in an email or whatever to schedule their group to come to you as like an event, you know, to help them learn some of the success skills that you're teaching your students. So it's really designed to be a mass marketing tool to go to large groups of people, those types of things. So those are the two purposes, and it's been pretty successful, and a bunch of our members have gotten really great press from it, and you have used it in a bunch of those types of campaigns. So that's basically what that was about.
Yeah, and so, you know, for members who qualify for and are in Peak Performers Inner Circle, it's something that we'll be doing periodically. It's just a special bonus for those people. And I guess the other thing to add then is that we have the Ultimate Martial Arts Marketing Bootcamp is going to come up in August. And, you know, Toby, as you know, I haven't done one of these for quite a while. This is going to be a super high level. I mean, it's not for bikers. It's not for, you know, part-timers. But it's a super high level focused, everything from copywriting and broadcast media through to really focusing on the highest level of internal marketing, external community-based marketing, direct mail, direct response marketing, internet marketing, and broadcast media. So really, every way there is to fill your school at a super high level. It's a free component for Peak Performers in a Circle. They can register to bring themselves and their staff. All of our Peak Performers in a Circle members on the call. You need the RSVP right away. We are, at 75% capacity already. and we're going to be in a small boutique hotel in Golden, Colorado, which is a beautiful setting right by the river. Golden is, I guess, only known as the, you know, the home of Coors beer. But it's a fun little hotel. It's a nice venue. Mostly, it's going to be the highest level martial arts marketing event in the last 3 or 4 years. Anybody who's not in Peak Performers Inner Circle, one way you can go is to go to napa.com/private coaching session, talk to Master Noe or myself, qualify for that, and then come to it for free. The other way you can do it is to register for the event by itself. It is, again, it's a very, you know, in some people's mind, pricey, but it will have a 50-to-1 or 100-to-1 return on investment. But it's a very high-level event. So successful school owners who want to be more successful should be there. Small school owners who are fighting along laterally probably aren't on the call, but if they were, it's not for them. The next thing, let's go back to some other questions. We had several other questions that came in by email. Probably have some people on the line who would like to raise their hand. So you want to open it for that, as well as if nobody wants to ask questions live, we can both pull up some of the email questions we have.
Yeah, absolutely. Everyone right now is muted. We're in Q&A mode. If you hit *6 on your phone, you'll be unmuted, and I'll see your little thing light up here. We can call on you by your phone number. But just hit *6 if you have a question about anything, you know, anything we've covered today specifically or operationally, and we'll call you up then.
Yeah. While we're waiting for that, one of the questions we have, which we should address before we run off today, is in summer marketing. We spent quite a bit of time last time talking about that, but you mentioned the thinking of everything is a 12-round fight. Which you stole from me. One of the things that I stole from Jeff Smith is always thinking in terms of whatever otherwise you would think of as your worst month of the year, making it your best month. And the first place I applied that from an idea that he gave me was we have always had our best cash month of the year for over 27 years is December. A month that a lot of people basically close up shop. The next way we've applied that is July and August have been the last 4 or 5 years at least our best enrollment month. So, you know, I have some of my schools, but now some of our franchise schools have their all-year enrollment record in July and all-year enrollment record in August. And so we've made summer into the best month of the year for enrollment, not what some people think of as slow. So, you know, if we should address that, because we had a couple of email and questions on that. Do we have any live questions before that?
I don't have any hands up yet. So if anybody has any specific questions, *6 on your phone, and we'll see you there.
Well, so let's be talking about summer marketing. Let's think in terms of three distinct segments of the market. One is the kids market, you know, boys and girls. Or kids and families, boys and girls, moms and dads, more moms than dads, typically. And then you have the adult women's market and you have the adult men's market. And in the kids market is you go from a time when really predominantly you know how to find them at, say, the local public or private elementary school, to a time when there are summer camps. Some of them have buses where they even don't have a physical location. They pick the kids up and go from the movie theater to the amusement park to the indoor something or other to the local pool, and they go from place to place to place all day. One of the things you can do is you can get yourself on the list for being one of the places. And, I've had summers where we ran 2,000 or 3,000 kids through basically 45-minute introductory classes where we didn't charge them for it, which they're happy because they have to pay for all this other stuff. And we got the list of every kid, name and phone number, and sometimes name, phone number, email address, and mailing address. And what then happened with that is suddenly we have a huge prospect database. So one of the ways I've thought about this for years is the mission in the summer is to go generate 1,000 or 2,000 a week for the kids market of people who have interacted with us, raised their hands a little bit, so that not only we can get a lot of enrollments for the summer, but also we can launch a huge direct mail, email, text messaging, broadcast voicemail, live outbound telemarketing campaign for back to school. So that's one part of building the summer. Toby, what would you add to that?
Well, obviously, the other thing that we're all really focused on right now, executing, is all of these summer family movie releases in the family market. In the adult market, we're going to be doing the same thing with Expendables 3 or whatever it is, 92 or whatever.
Batman, Spider-Man.
Exactly. So it's the same mass marketing. If you're new and you're not exactly sure about what we're describing, just go back to the member site and look at last month's call. And we basically laid the thing out in pretty crystal detail. But we use the same sort of mass lead generation spin wheel booth model at those theaters, where we're driving traffic to the booth, we're collecting a lead, they spin the wheel, then we're making, in many cases, a low price sale or setting an appointment, one or the other. And in that case, we'll do in a popular theater, we could do several hundred leads in a day, up to 400 or 500 or 600 leads in a weekend, depending on how populated that is. So we're really focused on summer movie releases right now, and other similar carnival-ish type activities. So the kids expos and the church who's having the summer carnival or the ice cream social or those types of things. We really want to have every weekend at least one, in some cases two or three, of these booths going on, these spin wheel booth models going on somewhere. And it's such an effective strategy for generating a lead that we have now crews of people that we've taught how to do the thing, so they can go, we can have two or three or four of them happening at once. Those are kind of like the expanded universe that we're looking at. We're looking at, what churches are having, what types of carnivals and festivals and picnics and those types of things, and movie releases. Those are kind of the mass lead generation, belly-to-belly process we're working on right now, pretty focused on.
Yeah, and as a reminder, where a lot of people miss the boat on this is they confuse activity with accomplishment. So they go do a couple big live events, or do a buddy day, or do Woody Wild Wings USC bullying event, or anything like that, and miss the point that it's always got to be about, at the very least, getting a name, address, phone number, hopefully that's a mobile number, email address. So now that we can follow up with them by email, direct mail, broadcast voicemail, and text messaging. The next thing about it is you've always got to make every effort to make a actual appointment to come visit you at the school, so you don't end up in the endless phone tag of just mailing to them and sending them stuff. And the third thing is that you can actually transact money, so they're more likely to show up. So if you you and I were both at the AMS convention, and they talked about an idea, a new idea they've been using, that's something I used 15 years ago and 10 years ago with great success. They were calling it the enrollment card, but the basic idea is one of the things you could do for the summer is create the pass for 5 weeks of lessons, a uniform, a free CD and a DVD, or bag gloves, whatever it is you can package into it. And I think their number was $10.70. When I did it before as a fundraiser for Chuck Norris, we were doing it for $24.97. But create a low price point certificate. And then what can happen is you can go sell, one, all the teenagers and young adults who might be looking for a summer job, you can give them this as something they can do for a summer job. So if I can go sell four of them an hour, and it's easy to give them a solution for that. If I go sell four of them an hour, I'm now making $40 an hour. The other thing you can do is sell that at event places. So when you're at a local carnival or fair or one thing or another, it's one of the things that you can sell. And the reason you're selling is not to make the $10. In fact, you probably should put volunteer and paid staff out there and let them keep the money. So the reason you're selling it is to make the appointment that you made with them even more solid. So since they made the commitment of giving you money, they're more likely to show up. But the process, don't go to an event like this and just do a demo. Make sure that you translate that into getting your name, address, phone number, email address. Translate that into scheduling a time for them for a definite appointment, and translate that into having them give you money for either a $9.97 or a $10.97 thing. Or, you know, I've had people from your circle members who've gone out and done a $99 transaction or $129. It's kind of like what you used to do with shopping malls. So is a higher price point transaction, again, that much more solid.
Yeah, and don't miss the point too. By the way, if this is something, one of the challenges that people run into with this is they encounter resistance from the host, you know, the movie theater or the church or the daycare or whatever, and the resistance that they encounter is, well, we don't want you to, you know, be collecting money that they might spend here at the movie theater for concessions or whatever, and in a lot of cases. It's just about creating a win-win scenario. So let's say it's a church, for example. Well, we would do that $10.97 or, you know, $24.97 or whatever the case may be as a donation to the church, you know, whatever the church fund is. Or if it's in an elementary school, a donation to the physical education department or the guidance department or whatever the case may be. So, again, don't be overly enamored. You know, the amount of money is irrelevant. It's about how do I kind of create that relationship and create a win-win scenario. So those are extremely useful, especially when you're talking about the private school and church market. They're always fundraising, always. So they're always looking for ways, you know, to do that. So it's a great tool. And Mr. Robert, we do have a couple of hands up if you wanted to go to that next.
Sure, and let's not forget that we need to walk people through the new look and feel of deliverables and to announce probably a hands-on webinar in the next week or so to walk them through that as well, which is easier to do looking at the computer screen and trying to describe it over the phone.
Absolutely.
Let's go to the first question.
Sure, we do have a couple of hands up. So if your last four of your phone number is 6741, you're up first. So 6741, are you there?
Hi guys, this is Mago.
Hey Mago.
Hey Mago, how you doing?
Hey, I'm doing great. Listen, I got a couple questions about the leadership program.
Yep.
Or the upgrade program, at least we're calling ours a leadership program, and I don't know if I have a good handle on exactly what my question is. I may have to ask a couple of follow-ups here, but we launched a new upgraded. Go ahead.
Before you get started, give everybody your brief recap of our Peak Performer meeting in West Point, Trek.
I thought it was an important thing. Like you said earlier on this call, I think probably the most valuable thing to me is just interacting with the other studio owners. And teachers and getting their perspective on stuff. You know, you get out there and everybody out there is really, really sharp and knows what they're doing, is concerned about their programs, but you kind of get this feeling that if they can do it, I can do it, you know, and that's probably the biggest deal to me.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And it's not like going to a martial arts tournament where you're dealing with a bunch of yo-yos. This is now a hand-selected group of people, all of whom are either hitting big numbers or on track to hit big numbers and are very sharp and sharing.
That was my experience. Yeah, I think that's the case.
Okay. Anyway, well, thanks for that. Your question about leadership was.
Yeah. So we have this program that we kind of launched, this upgrade program starting this month. But I have a large or a relatively large adult program, and that's just kind of where we've always been organically. And I was wondering if you guys could talk a little bit about the differences between what you do or what you would recommend people do for kids program leadership. The adult leadership systems. What are the things that are most attractive to the adults that you're getting the most success out of and that kind of thing?
Well, see, ironically, I think different than what most people think is there's very little difference. There's there's a little bit of difference in the presentation. You know, for my own schools, the criticism that we've always gotten from some people is that all of the textbooks and tools we use were adult stuff, not kid stuff. Because we expected the parents to be involved in the deal and for them to translate for their child if their child was 5 or 6. You know, we've recently looked at, I'm not looking at it right now, but with Carol's Krav Maga program, we were looking at Amazon and looking at all different flavors of like mental toughness training. Jim Lair, who's based here in Denver, wrote a series of books on mental toughness training. There's a book called Peak Performance and Peak Performers. The West Point book translates perfectly for adults. But there's a lot of books that are martial arts themed for business or military themed for developing confidence, focus, and leadership. And so really the thing is that it really is not very different. An adult is looking at how can I become more successful in my relationships? How can I become more effective in my business environment? How can I step out and stand out from the crowd from my other peers at work? In other words, how can I get the promotion or move up in the company? They're looking at how can I really, you know, sometimes in weight loss, the problem isn't that they believe you're going to have the right strategy for them. The problem is they believe that they won't actually do it. And so it really, once you get an adult in, is they now start to see how the martial art training is developing self-discipline. So now they're going to be able to follow through on their personal development goals. Then you're teaching the strategies of goal setting. Then you're teaching them how the strategies translate in their career, teaching them how it translates into their involvement with their church, teaching them how it translates into perhaps amateur softball leagues and so forth, teaching them how it translates into working with their kids and their family members. So, you know, there's remarkably little difference. And I think to a great extent, the adults, once they get actively engaged, need even less of the handing out XMA or some other type of physical thing. And more of they've got to start really seeing and believing that the mental and emotional skills they develop through martial arts training is going to carry over into everything else they do. Ultimately, they want to be happier and wealthier and healthier. So it develops that mindset. Does that make sense?
Absolutely, and that was my assumption. I mean, we're you know, this is kind of a foreign concept. This upgrade program and training is a little bit new for us, so we're launching it this month and seeing how it's going to go. Our assumption was this, that we were going to do the same thing with the kids that we were going to do with the adults, change the phraseology, you know, that we use, but basically they're all training and studying the same thing every month. So it's good to hear that we're on the right track. Okay.
Yeah, and when you have a kids and adult mixed class, is the way I've always trained our instructors, and keep in mind, is for 20 years, we've predominantly taught a median age of 7 plus their parents. But the way I've always taught it to our instructors is present everything at an educated adult level and then translate it to a level the kids will understand.
Okay.
Now, in reality, is you have some adults in the class that aren't all that educated and have a hard time following it. And as long as you always never skip the step of translating it, in other words, restating it in a simpler phrase, with a simpler way so that they can understand, you know, Zig Ziglar's discussion is always present something at, I think it's a sixth grade level. You know, I prefer to present it at a, 15th grade level and translate it to a sixth grade or a fourth grade level. But it works really well. And a lot of times the educated parents on the sideline get engaged and rise to the occasion. They always appreciate what you're doing. And they don't get concerned that you left your child out in the dust if you always translate and give the child or the less attuned adults an example that they can apply.
Great.
Well, good. Thank you, sir. We had another question.
Yeah, there is one. There is another one as well. You know, Michael. Also, I think for everybody, this would be pretty useful. I've got a quadrant that I think is really useful for kind of thinking through what Mago's thinking through right now. I have kind of four areas that I always want to. It makes a really good visual for everybody and really kind of makes sense for everybody. But if you have four quadrants, if you just draw an X on your paper, a plus or whatever, I would do career, family, fitness, money, right? So if you kind of wrap everything around that, if the leadership skills development program that you're building, that you're going to be talking about and teaching and convincing people that this is going to be a solution to a problem in their life, typically those problems fall into those four categories: career, family, money, and health, wellness, fitness, you know, that sort of thing. The fitness thing is what all of us do intrinsically. The other three are the ones I think that if you spend a little bit of time developing and thinking through, it can be infinitely more valuable, right? So
sure.
I think that quadrant is pretty useful, if that's helpful.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Absolutely. Good. Okay, there's another question as well. It's the last four, 8973.
Yeah,
8973,
hello.
You're up. How are
hello.
You?
Hello. Marshall Gagne.
Hey, who's this?
This is Marshall Gagne.
Hey, Marshall. How are you?
Real good. How about yourself?
Wonderful.
I received an email from NAPMA. I forget if it was from Stephen or who, but it was talking about a program supervisor that you should have a program. I think Toby sent it, actually. I was wondering, does a program supervisor, can I train him on doing upgrades? Because one of my problems is I'm pulled in 100 different directions, and I have a really fantastic master instructor, and he's pulled, too, in a lot of different directions. Should I be doing the upgrades, or can I train a program supervisor to do it, or should a master, do all three of us learn how? Do you have any suggestions for that?
Yeah. Mr. Robert, do you want to take a shot at that, or do you want me to address that? We may have lost Mr. Robert temporarily. Well, here's the thing. Probably program director.
I'm sorry. I was muted. I'm sorry. Yeah. I mean, the program director. What you said there, Toby, is probably right. I hadn't heard the language program supervisor, but the
Marshall,
yeah, in pretty much all cases in all schools, and if I was in a multi-school environment, you know, I always considered I needed a program director and instructor. I leaned towards one of them being what we call branch manager. I think Bill Clark calls them the master instructor or something like that. But you really need like somebody who's in charge and then a sidekick, which can be a head instructor or a program director. And I think the single school owner-operator tends to lean towards making the mistake of go hire a program director thinking that you're going to delegate. And in fact, you know, NAPMA taught that for a while, is thinking that you're going to go hire a quote-unquote salesperson and delegate, which usually turns out to be abdicate, the business side of things. And I think it's usually the wrong direction. Usually the right direction is to go hire a head instructor. And as the presumably master instructor, owner, operator, to move towards doing the sales. Now, when you start talking about the upgrade process, there's two things that happen that can be a mistake. One is, let's take it to high end. High Nguyen and Eric Williams at their school, which is 1.2, 1.5 million this year probably, by the time it's all said and done. They've got a big staff, but what happens is, if you're not careful, is you lose the rapport and the individual contact with the instructor, with the student, and then all of a sudden the person who's the business guy starts to be perceived as the business guy. And the biggest mistake you can make is intro one, intro two, a lot of personal attention, and then metaphorically throw them over the wall to the classroom and let the instructor deal with them for a few months and then go pull them out of the classroom and try to get them to behave. I mean, that's just not the way to go. For all of the upgrades, and again, I mentioned Jeff Smith's ratio earlier, well, it really is about basically an eight-lesson introductory process. Lesson one, lesson two, enroll on a trial for a year. Lesson three, four, five, six, if ready, renew into leadership. And so the secret of it is in maintaining that high level of rapport and really introducing them and indoctrinating them to the program in the right way, so that earlier on into the program, they really get it, if that makes sense.
It definitely makes sense. I'm outside the school a lot, so I guess I got that. It sounds like I got to get back in there and do it myself.
Well, it depends. I mean, model number one was always mine, which, you know, since 1983, I was never, you know, I won't say never, you know, I really only had two jobs. It was to do startups. So it was start a new school, add 100 students in the first month, renew them all in 90 days, create huge cash flow. And my other job was turnaround artist. So I would periodically go into whatever our worst out of five or six was and make it into the best one, mostly to prove the point to everybody else and everybody's numbers would come up. So you can run the school as basically an absentee owner operation and be just fine. And what happens when you do that is you've got to have a full-time program director and a full-time head instructor. And you want to be thinking of all the full-time people know that one may be predominantly responsible for people being on track for testing and for retention. One may be predominantly responsible for, say, the enrollment and intro process. Both of them are always responsible for the marketing processes. So they're always responsible for generating new students. Then if you have that kind of structure, it's really the head instructor who drives the upgrade more so than the program director, because the upgrade is driven more by high level of personal rapport, high level of dedication to martial arts, high level of dedication to long-term follow-up, high level of dedication to achieving black belt. And then once you get that high level of dedication, whoever handles the actual financial transaction is a pretty minor deal. The major deal is they've set their goal that they want to be a black belt. They've set their goal that they're going to be a long-time contributor to the school. They've set their goal that they're going to really make the commitment to the deal. And then you can have the head instructor smoothly through an evaluation process, through a recommendation process, hands them back to the program director, assuming the program director has always kept touch with them, always will walk through their progress, always greeted them on the way in and on the way out, and done a series of match-ups with them so that they have some credibility of something other than the person who takes the check.
Okay.
That makes sense.
You're saying like a head instructor or a master instructor, say, is doing the enrollment and upgrades, but then a program director could be in charge of the making sure they test on time and retention and stuff like that. So that's mainly what a program director would do then. But then
if you went the route of having a full-time program director, I would think of the program director's role as being external community-based marketing, internal referral marketing, meeting fairs, carnivals, festivals, movie theaters, buddy days, bring a friend nights, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. There's a long list there. And following up with those leads to get them into an introductory class, being predominantly responsible, although not necessarily doing all the teaching. We used to have a format where the program director taught the first lesson, the head instructor for the second lesson, and the program director did the enrollment conference. But I would have them predominantly. Oh, yeah, works great. And the nice thing about two people is the first person gets to what Nick Okinas used to call Dr. Hoffman, build up the second person. And then the head instructor comes into the second class and gets an opportunity to then do an evaluation and recommend them to the program director who can then finalize the enrollment. So, I always think in terms of program directors going to be doing outgoing cold calls, they're going to be following up on warm leads, they're going to be confirming intros. And if they're not a glorified receptionist, and some people's program directors are just glorified receptionists, but if they're not a glorified receptionist, they're doing first and second intros, or at least one or the other, and they're doing enrollment conferences, and they're doing some portion of the renewal prep, and probably finalizing the financing. But the master instructor, the highest level person perceived to be the quote-unquote martial arts expert in the facility, should be heavily engaged in the upgrade process. And again, with across six locations, I was involved in the upgrade through reference and not through personal involvement. We at one time had like a qualification process, and the program director would get the head instructor to approve, and there was a place for me to sign it off, and then they would show that we had to sit down and talk to Master Oliver, and he's very impressed. And, we got his permission for you to be involved in our black belt training and the leadership program. And so it would be In absence, it would be involved through reference. We do the same thing with CMRE, the CMRE Institute. I know some very successful schools. Dave Beaton used to do this, where really his only role across three locations would be to come in and do approval conferences for the upgrade. And so he would come in and meet with instructors, meet with the students, shake their hand, pat them on the back, you know, congratulate them on acceptance in the black belt training and let somebody else do the finance.
One problem I have, I can set this up right now like you're talking, and it sounds really good. The master instructor, though, if I'm not there, he's teaching a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So we're working on getting more instructors or, you know, leadership team type people helping. But at the moment, he's teaching a lot, so it's hard to get him off the floor.
Hard to get him off the floor. Well, you can solve that in one of three ways. One way is to have a team of leadership people and volunteer assistant instructors, so he can extend himself from the floor. Two is with scheduling, so that he doesn't go directly from class A to class B, and there's a 10 or 15 minute break in between. So he has some breathing room that he can talk to people. Third is by scheduling all this by appointment. And frankly, that's probably the best solution anyway, is you walk them through the paperwork and the qualification and do a little in-class physical evaluation. And then for a child, you know, you talk to mom and dad, you schedule an appointment where they and the child is going to be available. You may be familiar with Greg Silver. One of the things that Greg used to do 20 years ago is his biggest day of the year was Thanksgiving Day, because he scheduled appointments for everybody to come in and do their evaluations and qualifications on Thanksgiving Day. I don't recommend that you do it on Thanksgiving, but it's an example of you can schedule them for appointments noon to 3 for the ones that can be available. You can schedule them for appointments on Saturday afternoon. You can schedule them for appointments on Wednesday night from 7 to 9 when you have a block out to do stuff like that.
Yeah, that's okay. That's super. I appreciate that.
You bet. Did that help you narrow in on it?
Absolutely. Super answer. I really appreciate your time there.
Oh, you're very welcome.
Okay.
Pastor Nora, we're about out of time here.
Sure.
We have a bunch of questions about the new program format. And one of the things we clearly need to do is a focused webinar where people can log in on their computer and follow us. Let's describe for them philosophically why their materials look a little different and what we're accomplishing. And you know, let me start and then I'll hand it over to you. But one of the things that we're really working to accomplish at a high level is to make about 1,000% upgrade in the improvement of the kind of pre-done, done-for-you marketing materials that we're providing. And in today's digital world, there are all kinds of things we can accomplish. One is we've lined up 6 different print centers around the United States. One of the things that we can accomplish is you go in, you put your address, you put your phone number, and a box of 10,000 door hangers show up on your doorstep a few days later. At a price that's unimaginably cheap. I have a hard time believing that they can be produced that inexpensively. It's not much over the cost of paper. Another thing that we can do is we can create it where you enter that same data, give a mailing list to prospects, and it gets mailed for you. You never have to put stamps on the thing. The other thing, though, that we can accomplish, and this is purely talking about right now, you know, what used to be an artwork CD in the package, which is now going 100% online, is another thing that we can accomplish is just a huge amount of style, program, target audience-specific materials. And the last thing is we're really killing off the idea of some of the marketing concepts of the guide and really drilling down to exactly what we're seeing work in the top 100 schools in the world right now. So things on the inexpensive labor-intensive end like rack cards and banded signs, which are working fabulously, which we're providing the artwork for you now and letting it be print on demand so you can drop ship to you, up to much more sophisticated things. Toby, where would you pick up from there?
Well, on the marketing front, I think that we're moving pretty quickly. What we really want to do is move a hell of a lot faster than NAPMA has ever moved in the past. And in part, there was all this kind of infrastructure in the way. And right now we know that we're doing a lot of things online, that a lot of marketing channels, a lot of marketing media that we simply weren't facilitating. In the new marketing center, we have an entirely new section for web banners. So if you're out there doing banner exchanges, or if you're on the discussion forums, or you're doing any kind of affiliate things like that, you have media that you can use for that. So we've got web banners we're providing. We have Facebook ads.
You had to go about doing that as well.
Well, exactly. So it's kind of a cradle-to-grave approach where, there are these four fundamentals. It's beliefs, strategy, tactics, and execution. We've been talking about this over the last several weeks. And we really want to have not just the strategy, but also the tactics, also the tactical components that you can just go implement without having to go in and, learn how to use InDesign or Photoshop or, those types of things. I mean, it's just too complex on a software basis. I'm a software geek, and when I look at InDesign, my eyes go crossed, and I give up pretty quickly, And it's just, that's not my nature, but it's just a very complex, expensive suite of software. So all the stuff we're doing now is based on very simplistic software, very simplistic implementation strategies. We really want to help with speed of implementation. So on the marketing material front, that's where we're heading, and we're moving there very quickly. We have, I think, almost 400 pieces up on the new marketing center that you can go choose from flyers to rack cards to door hangers to lawn signs that you stick in the lawn and all of these types of things. And when you go to the marketing center, you can either download the file, and if you're a software geek and you decide that you want to deal with it, you can download the file and edit it and do what you like. Or you can just click, order, and you can send it to our facilitator who will do all the edits for you for free, by the way. He'll edit all the text you want for free. If you want graphical changes, I think they charge like a real small art fee, but the guy is just astronomically inexpensive. But they'll do the production aspect of it for you and just have it drop ship. So the speed of getting things done has been a big focus for us, for our members. Instead of, creating all these obstacles, we're actually creating just this smooth solution to just get it out, get it into the marketplace,
Yeah, the other couple of things on a smaller basis is we're mailing Mile High Maverick separately in a little different format, and one of the warrants of feedback we had gotten is that a lot of people consider that to be perhaps the first thing they look at of the materials, and rather than burying it into the package, we're sending it as a separate piece. The other thing is these teleconferences, members who are on the teleconference, and we encourage all of you to email questions ahead of time and ask them live, but it's probably the key component to ongoing movement because people are really hearing in real time what's happening in the market. And we know that, one, we cover, Toby speaks fast, and so do I. A lot of times we cover things in such depth and in such speed that you need an ability to replay it. And what we're now doing is mailing a CD of the teleconference, but along with the transcript. And, give us a little leeway that the transcripts aren't always perfect, but they're pretty close. So if you're like me and prefer to read it rather than listening to it, you can pull up transcripts, make copies of it, give your staff, hand off the CD to staff members who weren't there, or replay the teleconference for yourself. The other thing that we're doing, and it's the martial arts drills segment, which historically has been a DVD, is one of the things that was a huge asset of NAPMA's is literally a room that was probably, 2,500 square feet of a massive video library of fabulous martial arts curriculum, support materials and techniques and teaching techniques. And, we really consider the primary reason why people are going to be with us is to learn how to get more students, learn how to have them be of higher value, how to retain them longer, not so much how to learn a Taekwondo form or learn how to do a proper Muay Thai kick or something. But we have so much resources there that we are now going to, that being a web-based resource, that's again something that with your password you can give staff and put them on it, but it's searchable. And so there's 10 times more material online already. Adobe, that I don't know if that's probably not the right ratio. It's probably more like 51. So there's probably 50 times more material online already and continuing expanding than we possibly could have sent out on in a year on DVD. So we'll be mailing you more disk in some ways, because among other things, we're sending you the transcript and the recording of the teleconference every month, and mailing you more things because we're really trying to text and email and send postcards to encourage everybody to be on this call live and to submit questions ahead of time. And in other ways, we're shifting to a much more efficient and much more powerful delivery system, and really making about 1,000% upgrade on marketing materials, especially things that are working in today's market. You know, it does me no good to have a 2-column by 7-inch inline newspaper ad, because I would never use it right now. On the other hand, things like bandit signs and rack cards and post-it notes for the cover of the newspaper, 8.5 by 11 two-sided insert, banners for other people's websites, all of those are things that I would actually use, because we know that they're working in 2012.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, on the physical drill side of it too, a lot of material on there is going to be about classroom management, you know, how to manage a class, different ways to manipulate curriculum, rotating curriculum, things like that. And right now there is just over 500 different drills that you can kind of look at, and many of them again are very non-denominational. So it doesn't really matter the style of martial art you teach. It's about, you know, kind of expanding, teaching methodology, teaching strategy, and also some techniques here and there, you know. So that's definitely a cool feature. And what I'd really like to ask everybody to do, which I think we're going to do a lot of here toward the end of the year, but there's actually a feature on the video it's called the Classroom Mastery Institute. If you go to the Classroom Mastery Institute, there's actually a feature where you can actually upload your own videos too. So I'd encourage everybody to just, you know, take your little flip cam or your iPhone or whatever you've got, you know, that can do quick videos, and take a little video of you teaching maybe a technique that you love to teach, or maybe it's a life skill lesson, maybe it's a lesson on respect or self-confidence or self-discipline or whatever the case may be, and, you know, just upload it. We made it really simple. Basically what you do is just upload it over on YouTube and put the embed code in. Takes just a couple of clicks, and there's a little tutorial that'll show you how to do it and everything. And it would be a really useful way for everyone to kind of, you know, contribute to everyone else as well, and show some of those, you know, some things that you're particularly focused on or particularly effective with. So, you know, I'd like to ask everybody to do that and, you know, take a look at it and see what your thoughts are. And I think it'd be a pretty useful platform going forward to help kind of elevate everyone's implementation on the floor.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, there's so much more improvements and expansion of what we're providing that is difficult to go through online. But let's make the commitment that within the next week or so we'll do a focused webinar where everybody can log in on their computer and really walk through it and understand it. And again, you know, the one challenge we always have is there's so much content available that the ability to prioritize is what we're doing with one-on-one coaching with the performers in our circle and for everybody, what we're certainly trying to accomplish with our monthly teleconferences. So,
And by the way, that's all for two. Just so everyone knows, there are little walkthrough tutorial videos on each section of the site now. So when you go to the main member site, you'll have a little pop-up that'll give you kind of a walkthrough on where we've put some of the new stuff and how we've reorganized some of the materials. And then when you go to each of the new sections, when you go to the, you know, Classroom Mastery Institute or the NEMA Marketing Center, each of those, when they load, they also have a little walkthrough video. So as you go to each of these new sections, you'll have a little bit of help, you know, to kind of walk you through the new content, how it works, and how you can interact with it best.
Yeah, and we're way over our time limit. So when we send out the transcript to the CD, it's going to catch the first two-thirds of this one. But, hey, I might leave everybody with one quick thought. Is I'd like all of our members to continue a fine martial arts tradition. A fine martial arts tradition. I was reading a bio on Steve McQueen and reading another book, and the the martial arts tradition was a red Porsche 911, a red Mercedes SL convertible, and a gold Rolls-Royce Corniche. And what that martial arts tradition was is Bruce Lee's daily driver while he was in L.A. training McQueen and so forth in martial arts. There's a great story online on YouTube with Pat Johnson describing Bruce Lee getting the, you know, the whatever, scared out of him by riding with Steve McQueen in Steve McQueen's Porsche, and then Bruce Lee buying a Porsche and letting Steve McQueen have the keys. And again, through Mulholland Drive, Steve McQueen putting Bruce Lee underneath the dash. I've had the same experience in my Turbo 911 with Jim Reed yelling at me to slow down. I drive like Bruce Lee, so I guess Steve McQueen caught off. But the fine martial arts tradition was the gentleman that many people consider one of the icons of the industry had a 911 red Porsche, a Mercedes SL convertible in Hong Kong, and then when he signed the contract with Enter the Dragon, ordered a Rolls Royce, which was recently auctioned, and apparently he never took delivery of the Rolls Royce. He passed away before he got that one. So for any of those martial artists who somehow think that you know, making money is a bad thing, get over it. It's a fine tradition among those who are successful. And by the way, from pricing standpoint, Bruce Lee in his backyard without a formal school was charging $1,000 an hour for private lessons in the early 70s. So I think we can probably surpass that one nowadays with many of our guys. Master Milroy, that's all I have for today. Are you free for another follow-up call here for about 10 minutes, sir?
I think I am.
We have our mutual friend, Joe Corley, we're supposed to chat with 10 minutes ago.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah, great. Yeah, that'd be great.
Okay. Thank you very much for everybody. And, again, send us questions. And the marketing boot camp's in August. And if you're not in Peak Performers, talk to us about that if it seems like something that would drive you to the next level. Thank you.
Thanks, everybody. Speak to you soon. Thanks, sir.